public and is being conducted solely through the use of electronic equipment. COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone who is participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time that you are called upon to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not to interrupt the commission deliberations. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further, disruption may lead to that person's removal from the chronic meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. I will conduct the roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting, March 9th, 2022. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the minutes of the March 9th, 2022 meeting.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
All in favor? I will take a roll call. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer reports are all publicly accessible on our website at www.ct.gov/FOI, the link's agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2019-0636, Jacob Caratini versus Joseph Guadet, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Are you there, Mr. Caratini?
Yes.
Would you like this marked ready?
Yes.
Is there anyone there from the City of Bridgeport?
Mr. Chairman, Colleen Murphy, nobody from Bridgeport is intending to appear today.
Okay, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0141, Jacob Caratini versus Armando Perez, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport. Mr. Caratini, would you like that marked ready as well?
Correct.
So, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0437, David Taylor versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction. Are you there, Mr. Taylor?
Mr. Chairman, Colleen Murphy again. Mr. Taylor does not intend to participate.
Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Yes, Attorney Jennifer Lepore for the respondents.
Attorney Lepore, would you like to be heard, or may we rule on this?
No, I would just urge adoption of the hearing officer's report. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, in the matter of docket 2020-0437, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
For a second?
Commissioner Einhorn, second.
Thank you. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Adopting the hearing officer's report. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Lepore.
Thank
you. FIC 2020-0507, Sean Crocker versus Antonio Reyes, Chief Police Department, City of New Haven. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Mr. Chairman, Colleen Murphy, on that one, Mr. Crocker is no longer incarcerated in a Connecticut facility. We don't have a way to reach him. And for the respondent, no one intends to appear. This was a failure to prosecute.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move, Commissioner Streeter here, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Second, Commissioner Hankins.
Okay, all in favor of adoption of the hearing officer's report? Say aye. Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2020-0054, Claire Howard versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Administrative Services. Are you there, Ms. Howard? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Yes. This is Attorney Michael Barrera for the respondent, Department of Administrative Services.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes, please.
All right, we'll mark that ready. And it's Guerrera, G-U?
B as in boy, A-R-R-E-R-A.
E-A-R-R, say it again.
E-R-A.
E-R-A, thank you very much.
Yep.
Next is docket number FIC 2020-0098, Andrea Sandor versus New Canaan Library Incorporated et al. Are you there, Ms. Sandor?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Would you like us to mark this ready?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Is there anyone there from the New Canaan Library?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Smith from Robinson & Cole representing New Canaan Library.
Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Smith. All right. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0362, Joshua Essies versus David Dardens, Council, State of Connecticut, General Assembly, House of Representatives, et al. Are you there, Mr. Essies? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Yes, Assistant Attorney General Alma Nunley for the State of Connecticut.
Speak your name, please.
Assistant Attorney General Alma Nunley.
Alma Nunley. Thank you. Would you like this marked ready?
Yes, and I would like to be heard.
Mark it ready. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0547, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden, et al. Is Anthony Lazzari there, please?
Yes, I am here.
Can we mark this ready?
Yes, please.
Is there anyone there from the City of Meriden?
Yes, Christopher Clark, Associate City Attorney for the City of Meriden.
Attorney Clark. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0574, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden. Are you there again, Mr. Lazzari?
Yes, I am.
Mark that ready?
Yes, please.
And Attorney Clark, you're representing the City of Meriden again?
That's right.
Thank you. Next is FIC 2020-0575, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden, et al. Mr. Lazzari, you want that marked ready?
Yes, please.
And Attorney Clark, you're there, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Next is docket for FIC 2021-0039, Greg and Jen Haythorne versus Chairman, Town of Weston, et al. Are you there, Mr. and Mrs. Haythorne?
Yes, Greg Haythorne, I'm here. I would like to be heard.
Okay. And is there anyone there from the Town of Weston?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Attorney Nicholas Bomonti on behalf of all the respondents.
Thank you, Attorney Bomonti. Next is docket FIC 2020-0100, Christine Davis and Advanced Investigations LLC versus Chief Police Department, City of West Haven, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Attorney Michael Leone on behalf of the respondents for both this matter, 106 and 107.
Do you wish to be heard?
I do not, other than to support the adoption of the hearing officer's findings.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, with no objection from the complainant or respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Second. discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. Those in favor, Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Kadeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2021-0106, Christine Davis and Advanced Investigations, LLC, versus Chief Police Department, City of West Haven, et al. Is Christine Davis there? Counsel, do you wish to be heard on behalf of the City of West Haven?
Once again, no, I do not. Thank you. I just support the commissioner's the hearing officer's finding.
And your name again is, please?
Oh, my apologies. Attorney Michael Leone on behalf of the City of West Haven.
Thank you, Attorney Leone. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, when there's no objection of the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
For a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Reinhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2021-0107, Christine Davis and Advanced Investigations, LLC, versus Chief Police Department, City of West Haven. This one was also withdrawn. Attorney Leone, do you wish to be heard?
I do not. Again, I just support the hearing officer's findings.
I'm going to call again. Christine Davis, are you there? Hearing no response, I'd entertain a motion.
Commissioner Streeter here. Mr. Chairman, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. And last,
thank you, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you. Last is FIC 2021-0180, Catherine Camara versus Chairman, State of Connecticut State Marshal Commission, et al. Is Ms. Camara there, please? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut on this matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, seeing that neither the complainant or the respondent are here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Thank you. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. So before we consider these cases, I will ask the Executive Director and General Counsel, Colleen Murphy, to please make some general announcements.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For everyone on the call, please be advised that this hearing is being recorded in its entirety, and we will post it on our website very soon after this meeting. So if you should wish to review it, that's where it'll be, or you can contact the commission for further access to it. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. All right, we'll call the first matter, March Ready, docket number FIC 2019-0636, Jacob Caratini versus Joseph Guadet, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport, et al. Are you there, Mr. Caratini?
Yes.
Is there anyone there? Oh, no one's there from the City of Bridgeport. So, Mr. Caratini, would you like to begin, please?
Yes. Back in 2019, I filed freedom information. I received the information, and the information, I noticed that what I requested was not in there. So I again filed the freedom information on 3/11/20, and I'm still waiting for the City of Bridgeport to respond. I know COVID has been It's been hitting hard. It's been continuing, but as of yet, I haven't received anything from the city of Bridgeport. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for Mr. Caratini? Okay. Mr. Caratini, after this is ruled upon, you probably will get the records because the order says that within 7 days of the notice of the final decision in this matter, respondents shall provide the complainant with copies of the records described in Section 2A above, which have not already been provided to the complainant free of charge. So those records should be forthcoming, and that's only 2A. Okay?
Okay.
All right, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there a discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Bizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2020-0141, Jacob Caratini versus Armando Perez, Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport, et al. Are you there, Mr. Caratini?
Yes.
There's no one there from the City of Bridgeport, so have the floor.
Oh, I don't have nothing to say.
I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, seeing there's no objection to the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report. I mean, of the complainant, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
There a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. Those in favor, Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. All right, next is FIC. Oh, thank you, Mr. Caratini.
Thank you, Chairman.
Feel free to hang up.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Next is docket number FIC 2020-0054, Claire Howard versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Administrative Services, et al. Are you there, Claire Howard? All right, and I understand that Attorney Barrera is there for the state.
Yes, I am.
Would you like to begin, please?
Yes. So my only one thing I wanted to say was that I wanted to challenge the I asserted a statutory exemption, which was CGS 1-210, subsection 4, for records pertaining to strategy and negotiations with respect to pending claims or pending litigation. And the proposed final notice basically, you know, did not let me assert that. And I had sent a letter to the commission afterwards just requesting some additional time to prepare. I was going to write a legal brief, but actually as I got into it, there weren't any legal arguments and it was strictly factual, so I just sent over the accompanying docket information from the federal civil case as well as the EEO case and the Hartford Superior Court case that are the underlying litigation documents that are being sought as opposed through the discovery process, and you know, they're currently being litigated. I was just a little confused why I wasn't able to assert this statutory exemption.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions for counsel?
Sorry.
Yes? Any questions?
Is this Commissioner Fusetti? I'd like to hear Hearing Officer Harmon's response on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Fusetti. First, before I respond to Attorney Barrera's comments, if I could just clean up my first order on page 5. If the commission will indulge me, I just want to make a correction. So I would just like, it says within 14 days, I would like it to say within 14 days of the notice of final decision, and I apologize for missing that. And then it says the respondent shall disclose to the complainants, I'd like to add a copy of all of the records responsive to requests A, 2A through 2C, and then just continue. So just two corrections to kind of clean that up. I don't know if you want to take that up before I respond to Attorney Barrera.
Now, Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I will move adoption of the hearing officer's report in the orders per the language described by the hearing officer.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call on those in favor of the amendment. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Council, yeah.
So again, this is Attorney Harmon. Just to give the commissioner some perspective, this is a request that was made by Claire Howard on January 17th, 2020. And the first hearing in this case was scheduled for February 19th, 2021. So between the date of the complainant making the request and the first hearing, 1 year, 1 month, and 2 days had gone by. So you'll see in paragraph 8 that at the first hearing, counsel, Attorney Barrera, he came to the hearing. He told me that he had not had a chance to evaluate the case. He had no evidence to present at the hearing, but he said that he thought that he could review the records, get through most of the stuff requested, get it to the complainant. So actually, that's my paragraph 10. In paragraph 11, you'll see that I continued that first hearing so that the respondents could review the records at issue, gather what was responsive, and disclose to the complainant everything for which an exemption was not being claimed. And I just want to bring the commissioner's attention to the fact that the records here, A, B, and C, we're talking about correspondence in A. We're talking about registrations for trainings, workshops, and seminars in B. We're talking about copies of telework agreements in C. And so I did continue the hearing thinking that the respondents would come back, the records would be disclosed to the requester. Now it's been over a year, and that we could talk about exemptions. So between the first hearing and the second hearing, which occurred on November 1st, 2021, we're in a pandemic, we're moving kind of slow, 255 days go by between that first hearing, the continuance, now we're at the second hearing. And you'll see in paragraphs 12 that the respondents appeared at the second contested case hearing and said that their records could be exempt pursuant to 1-210B4, which is strategy and negotiations with respect to pending claims or pending litigation. However, counsel appeared at the second hearing without any witnesses and didn't present any evidence. So at this point, I asked the complainant, Claire Howard, if she had received anything in response to her request, which is now approximately 2 years old. She represented, or she actually testified that she hadn't received any records. So knowing that the requests in paragraph 2D and C might involve employees from the classified service and that the Supreme Court had issued a decision on those kinds of records in the case I cite in paragraph 19, I asked the respondents to submit an affidavit about the employees listed in paragraphs 2D and 2E as to whether they were classified service employees. They did submit the affidavit. Those employees are classified service employees. So on my own motion, I had him submit that affidavit. I found the records in paragraphs 2D and 2E exempt. and I ordered disclosure of the records responsive to 2A, 2B, and 2C. And, you know, I try to be a very understanding hearing officer. I know everyone's very busy, but when the request comes in and over a year goes by, and then almost a year goes by between the first hearing and the second hearing, and nothing has happened, I feel like I have to order disclosure of the requested records because, I mean, I don't know how many chances. And you know, I would remind the commissioners, and I think the commissioners know, that the exemption in 1-210 before is permissive exemption. I raise the affidavit issue because I feel like the records requested in paragraphs 2D and 2E are not permissive based on the Supreme Court's language and personnel director. But at this point, I think that the commission should order the disclosure of the responsive records in paragraphs A, B, and C. And I wonder, as I sit here today, with this hearing officer's report issuing on December 15th, up until today, another 98 days have gone by. What have the complainants received from the respondents? So we're talking almost, we're going on 3 years here. So I'm glad to answer any questions that the commissioners may have.
Are there any questions for Attorney Harmon? And I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the hearing officer's report as amended.
Your second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the hearing officer's report as amended. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0098, Andrea Sandor versus New Canaan Library Incorporated and the Town of New Canaan, et al. Thank you. Ms. Sandor, are you there?
Yes.
Are you there, Attorney Smith?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Attorney Smith, would you like to begin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the commission. The New Canaan Library has been responding to Andrea Sandor's request, and what the New Canaan Library has taken the position of is that it's not the functional equivalent of a governmental agency that is subject to the Freedom of Information Act, and therefore it was not required to disclose the information that she had requested, although it, as the record reflects, it did disclose information it had that it believed she was requesting, although she then later contended that she was actually asking for something else, although it's never been clear exactly what she had requested. In any event, the New Canaan Library is in full support of the conclusions made by the hearing officer, Kathleen Ross, in determining that it is not a functional equivalent of a governmental agency. And I can go on in particular, Ms. Sandor had tried to analogize the set of facts here for the New Canaan Library to another case that had been adjudicated by this commission, which was the Weber versus Sherman Library, where it was found that the Sherman Library was the functional equivalent, but the facts are quite different in several respects. One, the New Canaan Library is an association library; it's not a government-funded library, so it's not an actual governmental library. And secondly, the budgeting process that it goes through is different than the one that was utilized by the Sherman Library, which the hearing officer pointed out. And more importantly, and I raised this in my last brief to this commission, is that there is testimony by the chief librarian and executive director of the New Canaan Library, Lisa Oldman, that even if the town of New Canaan, which does provide 65 to 75% of the funding for the library each year, even though it does do that, the library has, there was testimony made and credited by the hearing officer that the library would continue to operate should the town, in its discretion, choose not to fund the library at that level or virtually any level. And that's a major distinction here that is differentiates it from the findings of the Sherman Library case, and that was as found by the hearing officer, who we agree correctly reviewed the four factors in the Woodstock Academy decision, and therefore we ask that this commission adopt the hearing officer's recommended decision in full and dismiss the complaint of Ms. Sandor. Thank you very much.
Ms. Sandor?
Yes, I wanted to start with a summary of my main arguments in my closing brief. The New Canaan Library is designated as an association principal public library, so it falls under the definition of public libraries in Connecticut General Statutes 190. And they receive grants from the state, being a principal public library, as defined in Section 1124A. And as per the 2013 settlement and that the attorney was referring to, an admission on the part of the New Canaan Library that they considered themselves a public agency and hence subject to FOIA. Under the doctrine of estoppel, I think it shall be deemed to have been stopped by law from changing its position, which it represented in 2013, on which the complainant relied. They basically had settled a case with me with regard to the FOIA-ability of the New Canaan, and I'll go into that in a little bit about more detail. But as per Ertl and Carruthers, citing a case, a claim of estoppel must be predicated upon proof of the following elements: that the party against whom estoppel is claimed must do or say something calculated or intend to induce another party to believe that certain facts exist or act on that belief, and that the other party must change its position in reliance to those facts, thereby incurring some injury. The New Canaan Library had stipulated that it was one legal entity, the New Canaan Library, Inc., a 501c3 profit, nonprofit. Therefore, documentation from all the operations and activities should be subject to FOIA as a single entity. And it, one part of the library is subject to the public agency designation, as they agreed in 2013, it should do in its entirety. No limitations were made when they agreed to the settlement with me in 2013 in the letter. They also cited public participation in their settlement, not just with me, the complainant, which goes out of the limitation of a specific matter with the complainant. Basically, they had said, after in-depth discussion with the library board of trustees and related individuals, the library would like to consider itself a public agency subject to the Freedom of Information Commission, and invites you to review any of the records which you may feel relating to your earlier requests, and further, the library will undertake to publish its minutes and make itself available to the public participation in the board meetings, which will be advertised as open. This was from the president of the board of trustees. So that's something I want to mention about estoppel. Regarding the Sherman, similarities with the Sherman case, the current New Canaan Library case substantially matches the same fact pattern as 2011-357 Weber versus Sherman in 2012, where the Sherman Library was found to be a functional equivalent of a public agency within the meaning of 1-201B, and therefore bound by the provisions of the Connecticut Freedom of Information Act. Both Sherman and New Canaan are private 501c3 nonprofit association libraries for IRS purposes. They both operate as free public libraries and are designated as association principal public libraries with governing boards elected in association vote in the respective towns. And both used this 501c3 status as a basis to claim they were not subject to FOIA. No other legal entities or constructs for fundraising, planning, a new building, et cetera, exist. They own their own land and buildings. And the complainants in both cases were asking for similar documentation concerning new buildings and renovation of the library. In the Sherman case, the complainant, they also both of them don't operate under any contract or fee for service for specific services, which would trigger EnviroTest systems versus FOIA commission. And they have the same funding structure. They receive substantial funds annually from the respective towns. With regard to how they get the funding, I would like to speak to that in a minute. But first, as part of the criteria that's in the Sherman case that allowed them to win their designation, and that's the four-prong test in the Woodstock Academy versus FOIA commission case. I believe that the respondents were focused on this. At prong one, whether the entity performs the government function, I would like to point out that as for the Connecticut General Statutes Title 7, Municipal Chapter 98, Scope of Municipal Power Section 7148, to make appropriations to libraries, any municipality should have the power to do any of the following. It make appropriations to military organizations, health care, hospital facilities, and they also include libraries in this. So the state explicitly calls out libraries. Essentially, what the statute says is since the town of New Canaan makes this significant appropriations to the library on an annual basis, as per the statute, the library is considered a public library and thus a public agency subject to FOIA. New Canaan Library is also listed as a separate department in the town of New Canaan budget with a mission statement similar to all the other town departments like Public Works, Town Clerk. It's not listed in the town budget category like outside other agency departments with the mission of contributions to outside organizations like daycare, health, transportation, showing its close association with the government. There's no separate services under a service agreement as such being rendered by the library for the town of New Canaan. The library has no contract, as mentioned before, for fee for service. And from the Weber and Sherman case, I would like to point out that for this prong, whether the entity performs a governmental function, there was a history. The government has been operating public libraries since about 300 BC when King Ptolemy first established the Great Library of Alexandria. And the history of the libraries is perform this governmental function is long. And I'll end it with providing public education has been determined to be a basic governmental function in the Board of Trustees, kind of Woodstock Academy versus FOIA. So for those reasons, I believe it meets the first prong test. The second prong test in terms of level of government funding, it's the government funding from the state and local is substantial. New Canaan pays for about 75% of the library's operating expenses annually, which is about $2.2 million in 2018, and also pays out of general funds of the town about $400,000 in health care benefits for all library employees annually. And from 1962 to 2011, all library employees were actually on the town's fully funded pension plan before they switched to 401k. It was stipulated a few employees are still grandfathered into that that pension plan. The town also approved capital expenses as needed for the library. They gave the library $475,000 in 2016 as a capital grant to purchase land for its library. And then more recently, the library requested, which is part of my request, the $10 million to pay for about a third of a new building that they would like to build. They were not all charity or gifts and subject to memorandums of understanding and public-private partnership agreements with stipulations. In-kind supports also provided to by the local government to the library in the form of discounts. The library participates in the town's group property and liability insurance plan and the wide area network, and then they reimburse the town back.
and the state applies for, the library applies for state funds. They get about, for capital and operating costs that they recently, they've been getting about $20,000 a year. So I believe that shows that there was substantial funding for the library. The most important, I think, is prong three, because on prong four, we stipulated, we agreed that the town hadn't, municipality hadn't created the library. So prong three is the extent of the government involvement. The New Canaan performs a governmental function, which is significantly controlled or regulated by government. If daily supervision is not required, there must be at least directive, pervasive, and continuous regulatory control. And like the site Hallis versus the Freedom of Information Commission, where the court held that to satisfy the regulation prong of this test, entity must operate under direct, pervasive, or continual regulatory control. And domestic violence services, the appellate court further opined that if the government does not have day-to-day involvement in the ongoing activities, the entity then the third prong of the function equivalent test is not met. One instance where the town has direct day-to-day involvement is the case of a power outage where the library agreed to be used as a town emergency shelter. This operation falls under the town emergency plan and policies who would coordinate with the library. Lisa Oldham confirmed this agreement in a January 15, 2020 town council hearing concerning the library's request for $10 million in the town for the new library after the town council member inquired if this would continue in the new building. As for the library's bylaws, in Article 3, Board of Trustees, the town and New Canaan government officials hold three positions on the library board. The first selectman is the next officio member and two additional town trustees defined in the public-private partnership agreement from the $10 million taxpayer capital appropriation. Both will be nominated by the town council and will have full voting rights. The town and New Canaan's first selectman on the library board is not
Chairman,
there.
So, Mr. Chairman, I have to object that she's introducing new evidence that was not heard by the hearing officer. How do I rectify this?
Thank you. Ms. Sander, you cannot introduce new evidence that was not introduced at the time that you presented this to the hearing officer. You can only argue from what was presented. All right? So please
right, so let me restate that then. The hearing officer had put in the bylaws of the Library of New Canaan, and at the version that she had that she put in, there were still three board members that were proposed at that time from July 2020, but they were all ex officio, and they changed this in October to be two with voting rights and one ex officio, so that's the difference. Apologies, I didn't know if they had updated the bylaws in the hearing officer's expectations. There's still three on the board as of the hearing evidence. The town of New Canaan's first selectman and library is not there by the same process as the board chooses other members, but mandatory appointment. And he's only there because he was voted into office by the general public. The board doesn't vote in this member. This is mandatory and conflicts actually with the town code for the library board, C21-8, which says no board member should be elected or appointed by the town. And this is going to require
again,
the library.
Mr. Chairman, again, I object. This was not presented before.
So Ms. Sander, you cannot introduce new evidence.
I'm not. I had introduced the town code as a exhibit earlier, and I'm pointing out the fact that the selectmen's in my closing statements that the selectmen's appointment to the board is in conflict with the town code that I've also put into evidence. But it's going to require that the library bylaws and policies are changed, change the government code.
Attorney
so
Smith.
The library, the library activities are going to impact the town.
I'm not sure what point she's trying to make.
Is that
basically
new
that The library's activities are impacting town laws by because the town code is that's in evidence. It's Exhibit 10. It's going to have to be changed.
Okay.
I mean that wasn't the issue when she raised the complaint about looking for documents in January of 2020. I mean, first of all, I don't think it's what she's saying is entirely accurate. And secondly, it's sort of outside the issue that is before the commission what her request was at the time.
May I ask the commission that I not be interrupted and I can just present my case, because I understand that there's time. What I'm discussing right now is not my request for the document, which I'll get to. I'm discussing prong three of the four-prong test for Woodstock. That's what I'm discussing now. Because the town, when I had filed my complaint, the instead of just making it about the document, the library and the council came back and told me they also decided that they weren't honoring the 2013 agreement. So they introduced this additional hurdle that I have right now to prove to you, not just about my document. And that's what I'm, for Attorney Smith's sake, that's what I'm trying to do now, is just show you the level of government involvement for this prong. Is that okay?
Continue, please.
Okay. I had introduced Exhibit 10, which is a town charter, which it mentions the library in three sections. And Section C5-6 are requests for annual appropriations, and they state that the town council, all officers, department heads, boards, commissions, committees of the town and the New Canaan Library shall annually, not later than the third Tuesday preceding the first Tuesday in February, submit to the selectmen in the form prescribed by the Board of Finance itemized estimates of the respective requests for appropriations to cover such expenses, together with statements in detail of the respective expenditures for similar purposes for the preceding fiscal year, like an audited financial statement, and other information as may from time to time be required by the Board of Finance. So important point is that a town can't force or compel any private entity to share its financial statements and submit a budget, and this section does just that. The next part of the town code is the pension and retirement.
Ms. Vandor, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Colleen Murphy, the executive director. You have gone on for well over 10 minutes at this point, even with the interruption. So could you please try to wrap up for us?
Right. I've already covered the pensions. And the library board actually references special acts, refers to the library directors of the town of New Canaan, not the New Canaan Library. And in fact, the town public had elected the library board between 1945 and 1947. I will skip over this part. The library's operations and large project planning directly affect government, in that because of the library's dependence on the government for a substantial amount of its annual funding, the government usually traditionally is required to spend a lot of time reviewing and studying and voting on financing parts of large projects and operating costs every year. So the current laws, I'd like to point out with the Yantic case that the reason why the Yantic versus FOIA case was important is that it showed the power of the purse, because the government pulled their funding from Yantic when they didn't do something that they liked. In fact, that just because that hasn't happened with New Canaan Library, it doesn't mean it can't happen, and it pertains here because of the dependence the town has. The library just always complied with what it was supposed to be doing each year. Also, the town has an expectation. They have a control in the power of the person, that they have an expectation of what services they'd like. And so they do fund 75% of it because they want it to operate at that level. And while it doesn't have day-to-day implications, it does substantially affect the day-to-day operations. The library would look much different if it was operating on a 25% of its budget. And the town management style, too, is not to micromanage day-to-day operations of any of its departments. Usually the department heads have a mission statement, like the library. The person who runs the department manages to that and reports back every year. So the town indicates management style isn't treating the library any differently than it's treating any other town department, and maybe it doesn't rise to the level.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Chabet. I feel like I'm gathering the gist of Ms. Sandor's arguments, but I do have a question for the hearing officer, if this would be an appropriate time to ask it.
I just want to make sure, Ms. Sandor, are you finished at this point?
No, I have. I for prong four, I have another important point, and I have a statutory argument I'd like to make, and then I can address quickly.
You've already gone over your time, so let me ask Attorney Murphy, do we need to take a vote to allow her to spend a few more minutes arguing her fourth prong?
I think that can be at your discretion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I'll give you two more minutes. Attorney Murphy, please keep the timing. And Commissioner Chavez, is that all right with you if we get back to your question after 2 minutes more of argument?
Yes. Okay. Yes, of course.
So we'll go right to you after that. So, Ms. Sandor, you have 2 minutes to wrap up, and we're going to be strict about that. Go ahead.
Regarding the state of Connecticut control, the New Canaan Library qualifies as a quasi-public library, and pertaining to section 11-8 records management program. And in a guide from the Connecticut Public Library Quick Guide to Governments, it states under Association Principal Public Library for Record Retention that they may be required to abide by FOIA laws. The library had filed, according to this process, in 2012 an RC-075 form for permission to destroy public documents. So they knew before my 2013 complaint that they should comply with it. The other point I'd like to make is that there's a statutory argument. Connecticut General Section 11, if libraries are not subject to FOIA, why do they have an exception in the section and in the Public Act 07-227? I'd like to cite some cases quickly. The court has consistently has interpreted the FOIA legislative policy to require diligent protection of the public's right to access agency proceedings. Our construction of the FOIA must be guided by the policy favoring disclosure and exceptions to disclosure and may be narrowly construed. The cases I'd like to cite in their liberal interpretation of this is Stanford versus Freedom of Information, 1997, Gould versus Freedom of Information in 2014, the Board of Trustees versus Freedom of Information Commission about the process of a policy of liberal access to meetings. In this case. And I'd like to cite case law for estoppel, Shannon versus Department of Environmental Protection. With regard to the report that I was given, I had many times it had been stated that there was a cost problem for renovating the library, and I asked for that specific cost information. But in a July 2020 letter from the library, they stated that the one report that they gave me was a comprehensive assessment of the present physical facilities and that it counseled against preserving the older structure for a variety of cost and engineering reasons. Nowhere in the document that they gave me does it have anything that is in the July 2020 letter from the library's council. The report that they described doesn't match the Kohler-Ronan study that they gave me. So where is this document? In testimony, Lisa did say that the document I was requesting did exist, but it was prior to her joining in 2013, and she didn't have access to it anymore. But that doesn't mean that it can't be recreated, because the company that did the study, Centerbrook Architects, is still employed by the library.
Ms. Sandor, the 2 minutes has gone by.
Phew, I think I'm done.
Thank you.
Chairman,
yes.
This is Attorney Smith. May I, after the other commissioner has opportunity to ask questions, I would just like to ask the indulgence of the commission to give me a minute or two rebuttal, since I'm hearing new information that I don't think is accurate.
Mr. Chavez,
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Chavez. I have a quick question for Attorney Ross. Ms. Sandor made reference to a waiver argument based on something that happened in 2013, and I don't see that referenced in your report, and I would I would imagine that wasn't raised. Or can you address that for me? Thank you.
You are muted, Attorney Ross.
May I ask a question of the commission quickly, though, to Andrea Sandor?
Not at this point. No, ma'am. The commission is speaking now. Thank you.
So that issue was raised. Perhaps if I provide some context, you may understand better why it's not in the report. So as I understand it, Ms. Sandor previously had filed an FOI complaint against the library, I guess, back in the 2012-13 timeframe. And as typically happens in some of our cases, there was an agreement that if they gave her the records, she would withdraw her complaint. Now, in this particular case, and the attorney
That's
for the
not
library
correct.
May be able to provide you with additional information that I don't have. The library at the time, and this is pre the current executive director and pre this current attorney that's representing them. So I'm not sure how much they can opine on this, but at that time, the library executive director, in conjunction with their attorney, did tell the complainant that they agreed that they were a public agency. But I don't think that that constitutes a waiver. So in other words, in another case, they can still claim that exemption.
Okay.
It's not an exemption in this case. They can still argue that they're not a public agency. If the commission had adjudicated that case and found that they were the functional equivalent of a public agency, that would be a different matter. But this was like a private agreement among them. You obviously, as the commission, have the authority to determine whether the entity is a public agency or the functional equivalent thereof.
Okay. This is Commissioner Chavez. Attorney Ross, that answers my question. I'm satisfied with that answer. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Einhorn. You know, with all due respect to the hearing officer, and I know it was a lot of hard work, I disagree with the result and the interpretation of Board of Trustees of Woodstock Academy. As you read Board of Trustees of Woodstock Academy, it doesn't say, as the hearing officer said in paragraph 9, that four factors must be considered. But what Woodstock says is that those are major and discrete criteria which federal courts have utilized in employing a functional equivalent test. And then they go through those four tests. The problem is, if you read the Woodstock case, particularly the conclusion, the real concept here on functional equivalent is whether or not this is a truly private entity. And that bothers me in this case. I don't know any truly private entities that get town grants, $10 million for the purchase of land and construction of a new library building, or that receive 65 to 75% of funding for the library, annual funding. So it's not necessary under Woodstock that you satisfy all four of those tests. Those are just, as Woodstock says, citing federal cases, those are just criteria that have been used to determine the functional equivalent test. I think it would be a real travesty if, in fact, we decided that this library was, in fact, a truly private entity. And again, reading Woodstock, I think just reading the last paragraph says it all, where the court says it would be anomalous if Woodstock Academy could avoid the requirements of FOIA and not disclose its financial records to those persons who fund its operation, which is, in fact, the taxpayers, in light of the extensive involvement with state and town government. In other words, the criteria we have utilized should also ensure that a truly private entity would not be subject to disclosures which were unintended by our FOIA. So I don't think any one of us here can say that this is a truly private entity that was never intended to have its disclosures covered by FOIA. So I would disagree. I think that this the extent of the funding by taxpayer money, it really bothers me that we're going to give the or at least there's the proposal to give the library a free ride to avoid FOIA and still get that much funding from the town. I would say on a political level that if it wasn't such a small town anywhere else in the state, I think people would be outraged that kind of money would go to a so-called private entity. So yeah, I with all due respect, I disagree with the hearing officer, and I think this is in fact clearly the functional equivalent of a public agency. Sorry to go so long.
Thank you. Any of the other commissioners wish to be heard?
Commissioner Streeter, I understand my fellow commissioners' comments, but in this case, I seem to see, I agree with the hearing officer that in this case that they are not they haven't met the proper prongs of the functional equivalency, that they are not a public agency. So I would be in support of that.
Matt, the problem is there are no prongs. If looking at the case, it just says consider these factors. It doesn't say they must be considered. It just says that these are criteria. So, sorry, yes.
Okay, that's Commissioner Einhorn. Yes.
Yes, it was me again.
Thank you for your comment.
Thanks.
Commissioner Fusesi? May I speak for a minute?
Commissioner Chavez, did you want to say something?
I will after Commissioner Fusesi.
Commissioner Fusesi.
I would just like to say that the case that Commissioner Einhorn refers to does do a balancing test, and there is factors taken into consideration. It is my feeling that some libraries in some cities, towns as they're operated in Connecticut, would be subject to FOIA, but not all libraries as operated in all cities in Connecticut, which receive some or more money, would be or should be subject to FOIA. So I believe the key is the balancing analysis, or some balancing analysis, not only of the money given, but other factors. So based on the analysis of the factors here, I am going to vote for the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Chavez.
Thank you. This is Commissioner Chavez. I also support the hearing officer's decision, and I think that my reading of the application of the Woodstock Academy case, especially with the last sentence of paragraph 9, is that the hearing officer appropriately recognized that there are four factors, and none of them is dispositive, and the application was consistent with what's laid out in paragraph 9, including the quote from the Connecticut Humane Society case, which is the balancing of the different relevant criteria, as the hearing officer has done at length. And I also agree with what Commissioner Fusesi just said about this really being a fact-based inquiry, and what may be true in one town would not be true in another in terms of the level of governmental funding, day-to-day involvement in the operation of the library, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners wish to be heard?
This is Commissioner Hankins. I would agree with the hearing officer's decision, and it's meticulous and thorough and did follow the law and, applied the law to the particular facts in the case, so I would agree with it.
Thank you. This is Owen Egan. I also agree with the hearing officer's report. I have to say that I agreed early on as I read this with Commissioner Einhorn's thoughts. And I looked more closely at all of the case law that was cited by Attorney Ross and well argued by Attorney Ross, especially the Greenwich Emergency Medical Services case. And I do think the four-prong test was applied. I do agree with Commissioner Einhorn. No one of those tests, one of those tests could be relied upon in and of itself, but considered cumulatively, Attorney Ross has done an excellent job in putting forth the position of this commission. I think that this is the right decision, given the recent case law that has come down, specifically the Greenwich Emergency Medical Services case. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to be heard? I know that I know that Attorney Smith wanted an extra few minutes to rebut. Is that still the case, Attorney Smith?
No, thank you for giving me the opportunity, but I waive any further argument at this time.
Okay.
Do I have a chance to rebut?
Attorney
Smith?
Extra time, ma'am. Attorney Smith wanted to rebut some of the things that you said, and so he didn't argue after you, so I don't think it's appropriate to allow you even more time to speak, but I will defer to the other commissioners. Do the other commissioners wish to hear from Ms. Sandor?
As Commissioner Hankins, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. There's nothing to rebut.
May I go on the record as saying that some of the things that he made in his opening statement are incorrect, but I didn't have time because I had my 10 minutes prepared to address any of them, but I want to go on the record that he made a lot of false statements.
Well, Mr. Chairman, she had more than almost 15 minutes, maybe more, to do that. She chose to choose other arguments.
Well, I'd like to point out to the
Commissioner Streeter,
commission that my...
I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chabet?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
No.
Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes with one objection. Commissioner Einhorn. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sandor. Thank you, Attorney Smith.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the default judgment.
Okay, we'll move on to next matter. This is docket number FIC 2020-0362, Joshua Essies versus David Desjardins, Council, State of Connecticut Assembly, House of Representatives et al. Are you there, Joshua Essies? Are you there, Elma?
Hi, this is Joshua Essies. Sorry, I heard my name.
Sorry. Are you there, Attorney Alma Nemley?
Yes, I'm here.
So, Mr. Essies, would you like to begin?
I'll rely on the hearing officer. I don't have any independent remarks at this point.
Thank you. Attorney Nemley?
Yes, thank you. This matter involves email addresses of individuals who receive e-blast newsletters from the respondent legislators. I respectfully request that the Commission not adopt the proposed final decision as currently written for two reasons, one narrow and one broad. I will begin with the narrow reason because I believe it informs the broader one. In paragraph 12 of the proposed final decision, there's a factual finding, and I quote, in Godbout, the Commission ultimately concluded that because the correspondence associated with the email addresses did not pertain to the legislature's role as lawmaker, that such email addresses were not public records and therefore were not subject to disclosure, end of the quote. This is inaccurate. In paragraph 2 of the Godbout decision, The commission found that the complainant had requested, and I quote, records related to Senate Bill 1076. The commission in Gaubelt further described the type of correspondence responsive to the request in paragraph 14 as a letter to the respondents concerning a pending piece of legislation. Thus, the substance of the emails in Gaubelt did relate to the lawmaking function. This is significant because in paragraph 19 of Gaubelt, the commission nonetheless concluded that the associated email addresses were not public records. Rather than base its decision on the substance of the emails, the commission relied on the fact that, unlike the names and towns of the authors of the email addresses themselves provided no information concerning whether the authors were constituents and therefore were unrelated to the public's business. Turning to the broader issue, the conclusion of the proposed final decision is flawed because it is based on the aforementioned incorrect factual findings related to Gaubelt. Based upon the actual findings in Gaubelt, the proposed final decision here would find that when a person sends an email to a legislature concerning a specific piece of legislation, their email address is not a public record. But if instead a person receives a newsletter from the same legislator, regardless of whether they ever requested the newsletter, then their email address is a public record. The commission should reject this conclusion. The email addresses here provide no greater information regarding the public's business than they did in Gaubelt, and therefore are no more a public record than they were in that matter. Therefore, the commission should amend the proposed final decision to accurately represent the findings in Gaubelt, and more importantly, to find that the email addresses here are not public records and as such are not subject to disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
This is Commissioner Chavez. Mr. Chairman, I know that Attorney Reed is no longer here, but I wonder if maybe General Counsel Murphy could address the question about the Gaubelt case and the accuracy of the reference in paragraph 12 to what Gaubelt relied on.
Thanks, Commissioner. Colleen Murphy here. I don't have that decision before me. I'd be happy to, you know, try to take a look maybe while you're deliberating on another case if you'd like me to. I think, however, that the primary conclusion here is in paragraph 14, where there's no, in this case, there's no distinguishing whether this database is a constituent database or whether it's related to lawmaking responsibilities, for lack of a better phrase, and that it's a database from various sources and that such data is not connected or otherwise associated with any particular correspondence. So I think without evidence kind of dividing these two things up, as we have in other cases, not just in Gaubelt. I'm not sure everyone got a little blast there. You know, we've done this split in prior cases for constituent services versus lawmaking responsibilities, concluding that matters relating to constituents is not the public agency function and therefore exempt, and matters relating to the lawmaking function are public records subject to disclosure. So if you'd like, though, I can take a look at Gaubelt just to ascertain that particular issue on that set of facts.
This is Commissioner Chavez. In light of your explanation, I am not requesting that you go back and look at Gaubelt for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Motion has been made. Second.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none.
Ms. Commissioner Fritesh, I'd just like to say it seems to me that the facts, if one receives these emails and never isolates them, it makes it impossible to make the judgment. So if legislators want to protect certain emails, they have the obligation to isolate them, and then the law, then we could make a distinction. But if they chosen not to isolate them, not to keep them separate as the source, then we have no alternative but to make the decision that we are making at the moment. So it's a balancing of who has, without them being isolated, they're all protected in theory, and that's not consistent with the prior law. So that's all.
This is Commissioner Chavez. I just wanted to add, I am looking at it the same way as Commissioner Fuseschi just articulated.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn? Mr. Einhorn?
Mute. Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And I'm going to call Commissioner Einhorn again. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Thank you. Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2020-0547. Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden.
Mr. Chairman, can we take all three together, or are they all different?
Attorney Murphy?
I may defer to the hearing officer on that. They do seem quite similar, but I'll let the hearing officer speak to that.
Hi, yes, Mr. Chairman. These three complaints were virtually identical. Typically, we do have that happen sometimes, and often when it's pointed out to the complainant, because sometimes it's done by accident, the complainant will just withdraw the ones that are not necessary. But in this case, that didn't happen. So that's the reason why you have three very similar reports. So I would say that you could definitely address them together.
Thank you. Attorney Murphy, should we have a motion to take docket numbers ending in 0547, 0574, and 0575 together?
Sure, you can do that.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Hankins. Before that, I just wanted the parties to know that I was an attorney for the City of Meriden from 1988 to 2001, and I've not been connected with the City of Meriden for 21 years. But I don't know if either party wants me to recuse myself. I certainly would and would not take any offense by that. So I think maybe they should be heard on that now.
I don't think Anthony Lazzari is there. Is Anthony Lazzari there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry. Mr. Lazzari, would you like Commissioner Hankins to recuse himself?
If he feels it's necessary, I mean, I think he would know more than anybody if that would be a conflict of interest. And if he feels like he would have some bias and prejudice in hearing argument, then I think that he should. If he feels that he wouldn't, then I'll let him decide.
But this is Commissioner Hankins. I think that's probably the wisest response I've ever heard. I don't believe that I would have any prejudice one way or another. So I feel I can sit fairly. And we haven't heard from the City of Meriden, but I feel like I could serve the everyone's interest neutrally.
Attorney Clark, would you like Commissioner Hankins to recuse himself?
I don't feel that it's necessary.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'll entertain a motion to combine all three of these matters involving Anthony Lazzari and the City of Meriden. Would someone make a motion, please?
Yes, Commissioner Streeter, I will move that we consolidate these three consolidated cases at this time. 2020-0547, 2020-0574, and 2020-0575.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there discussion on combining these three cases? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Pesci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. All three matters are combined. Attorney Murphy, should I call all three, or have we substantially identified them?
I think the record's pretty clear.
All right. You're okay. Thank you. So, would the City of Meriden, Attorney Clark, like to begin?
Thank you. Yes, we don't have any issues with the recommended ruling. We've actually already complied with it. The recommended ruling was that we were supposed to disclose, or rather it held that we were not correct in withholding four individual search warrants, but that everything else we withheld was properly withheld under the exemptions for pending criminal matter that has actually come to fruition. So we have disclosed those four warrants, and I have nothing further. And I recommend I move for adoption of the proposed ruling.
Okay. Does Anthony Lazzari have anything to say?
Yeah, just briefly. All three of the FOIA requests are not identical. If you read them all, you'll see that there are slight differences in each one as far as records requests. As far as the hearing officer's findings that the Meriden PD violated certain laws, that definitely should be affirmed. But the hearing officer should have definitely allowed the complainant to obtain all the requested information related to the FOIA request based on the entire record. No piece of information from the Meriden PD should be withheld and properly hid from the complainant. I'd also like to point out, too, that the Meriden PD is not permitted nor legally authorized to improperly hide information from a complainant, especially now in a pending case. It's a violation of fair procedures, a fair process, fundamental fairness, and fair and equal justice. I would like to request that all matters get sent back down and are reopened to the hearing officer to address the issues based on the fact that there's a pending case in New Haven. I think that would probably avoid any further requests if we could address this now rather than later. And that would be, yeah, that would, that's all pretty much what I need to state.
May I respond to that briefly?
Yes.
So the case that Mr. Lazzari is referring to is a case, a criminal case that's pending in New Haven. He's up on 10 felony charges relating to prostitution, human trafficking, and enticing minors with a computer. These documents that he asked for was essentially the entire police file for the two case numbers that deal with that investigation. Given that he is now a criminal defendant, I'm not a criminal attorney, but I know there is a discovery process in criminal court. It's more appropriate that he follow that procedure at this time. The commissioner's ruling is correct that the documents that he requested would have been prejudicial to an ongoing law enforcement investigation or action, given that he would have gotten the names of witnesses and their statements that he could use to intimidate them or to obfuscate what they may say later down the line. I just feel that the criminal court is a better avenue for him to get whatever he needs to defend himself against these very serious charges.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions? All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report in these three cases.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I second the motion.
Your discussion? Hearing none. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Lazzari. Thank you, Attorney Clarkin.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2021-0039, Dean Haythorne versus Chairman, Town of Weston, et al. Are you there, Mr. Haythorne?
I am, yes. Thank you.
Are you there, Attorney Beaumont? I'm sorry.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. Attorney Beaumonte, yes, I'm here.
Beaumonte, I couldn't read my writing. Sorry about that. Thank you very much. Mr. Haythorne, would you like to begin, please?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Admittedly, I have no legal training or experience, but I'm here today to explain why I believe the FIC hearing officer's recommendation is premature in this matter. We have been assured by our FIC ombudsman that the burden of proof of compliance with all FOIA requirements rests squarely and solely on respondents in complaints before this commission. If so, the respondents in this matter offered none, nor under questioning did they offer independently verifiable details of compliance which could be considered proof. The respondents also elected not to submit exhibits as evidence, which might rise to the standard or precedent for demonstrating the existence of a preponderance of evidence. Instead, respondents called 2 of 8 potentially relevant witnesses to our FOIA records request, who both made only the following statements under oath. We looked for records. We found one pertinent record of meeting scheduling. There are no more pertinent records known to exist to the two respondent witnesses. Admittedly, we lack the legal experience and training to appreciate the legal precedent for these statements to have constituted a preponderance of evidence in the eyes of this commission. For if these statements alone are sufficient to meet the legal standard for a preponderance, there is no appreciable burden to the legal requirement of respondents to produce and submit proof. And by extension, therefore, to the layperson, there would seem only questionable value for a standing FOIA commission with dozens of full-time staff and a multi-million-dollar budget to rule that the burden of proof in this matter has been met. We as complainants could simply have accepted these statements as reliable 14 months ago and spared ourselves the work while saving everyone the time. So why then did we complain? We filed a formal complaint due to the content of dozens of FOIA records obtained from the same respondents and related records requests, which were accepted into evidence in this matter for discretionary review by the FIC officer and the commissioners. Those records document a long pattern of unreliability and inaccuracy of similar representations of FOIA compliance in those related matters by the exact same respondents in this matter. If a pattern of inaccuracy of assurance of full and prompt compliance is documented to be unreliable and non-credible to the complainant in the absence of evidence other than simple unsubstantiated statements, then such statements alone must be deemed unreliable or inadequate to the FIC. We appreciate that the FIC complaint, mediation, and hearing process, after having gone through it the past year and this and other matters, is anything but without incalculable public value. It is enormously important to Connecticut residents, taxpayers, voters, only because we did not accept as reliable the respondents' assurances of compliance did we proceed to hearing in this matter. And at hearing, one of the two respondent witnesses, Jonathan Louise, gave sworn testimony as to the existence of records that would constitute documentable evidence to this commission of the conduct of record searches by the 8 parties involved. And if evidence is revealed under oath by respondents to exist, it would seem it is the charge and duty of this commission to enforce also the state of Connecticut's FOIA statute, then it seems incumbent upon this commission to require production of those known records of evidence of compliance prior to issuing a final ruling. The respondents had ample opportunity to choose to submit an actual preponderance of evidence to prove compliance in this matter, but elected not to, as is their right. Given that doing so would likely have caused the complainants, me, to withdraw, the respondents' choice not to produce documented evidence should create considerable doubt among a preponderance of the commissioners. If there is no evidence to confirm the conduct of valid record searches by all 8 parties to this complaint, the commission cannot yet rule to dismiss, because the respondent's choice is then consistent with the documented pattern of unreliability of their FOIA compliance representations It creates doubt for complainants that will not be erased until such records now known to exist are produced. We are aware that the FIC hearing officer in this matter has recommended dismissal of our complaint. If it is within the discretion of the full FIC commission, we respectfully request that the commissioners order the production of known search records in this matter for review by the complainants and the commission hearing officer prior to its final ruling in this matter. Due to the documented pattern of respondents' unreliable and non-credible statements of compliance, it is reasonable to expect that the evidence stated under oath to exist will not be produced by respondents given such an FIC order. And if not, the respondents, at the very least, cannot be found to have promptly met their FOIA obligations. They had ample opportunities to submit an actual preponderance of evidence, but elected not to. At the point at which they are ordered to produce such evidence, we can then withdraw our pending docketed complaint before this commission for production of the search records in this matter now known to exist due to sworn testimony of Respondent Louise. It is still possible to spare all at least some of the time and effort. A ruling by this commission for anything less would seem to be to the inexperienced layperson to fail to fulfill the duty of enforcement of Connecticut's FOIA statutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does Attorney Belmonte wish to address the commission?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just briefly. Thank you again, and good afternoon, commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Nicholas Belmonte, from the law firm of Bertram Moses, on behalf of all of the respondents in this appeal. So we just heard from the complainant. We heard some buzzwords such as reasonable to expect, reasonable to believe. There's a lot of speculation there. In fact, the entirety of the complainant's allegations here is based in speculation. The real issue, the only issue in this appeal is, did the town of Weston provide all responsive records to the complainant related to the selection of the Board of Finance chairman and vice chairman, which occurred back in January of 2021? The answer to that is yes, and as was correctly determined by Attorney Harmon in her proposed final decision, so we certainly support and urge adoption of that final decision. But just for this commission's edification, I'll briefly recap just a few salient points. Under the town's charter, our Board of Finance selects its chairman and its vice chairman by vote of those Board of Finance members at the board's own meeting every January. There's nothing special about this process. Like any other typical board or commission, the Board of Finance will add the selection of its chairman and vice chairman to its January meeting agenda, and then the members at that meeting will discuss and ultimately vote to select a chairman and a vice chairman for the ensuing year. And as one might expect, there is typically very little records associated with this process. And that was the same process that occurred as it relates to this request. So that process occurred when the Board of Finance voted to select its chairman and vice chairman during its public meeting on January 14th, 2021. That's the main date at issue here. So the request at issue here comes in a few days later on January 17th. It's a Sunday. The complainants essentially in that request seek any records in the town's possession related to that vice chairman and chairman selection process. And then 3 days later, after that, on Wednesday, January 20th, the town did, in fact, produce all the records it had. It wasn't very many. In fact, it was two transitory emails between town officials, really just identifying what items were going to be placed on the Board of Finance's January 14th meeting agenda. Those are the only actual records in existence. No other records existed because all of the discussion about this selection process on January 14th occurred amongst the Board of Finance members at that meeting. No emails, no other meetings, no other records. So just to come full circle here, at the end of the day, the facts in evidence only show that the town received a request on a Sunday and then 3 days later provided all records responsive to that request. The complainants here, even though numerous exhibits were admitted over our objection, there is zero evidence to the contrary that other records do in fact exist. Like I mentioned at the top, all of these allegations are purely based on speculation. So ultimately, we believe the proposed final decision correctly recites the facts, correctly applies the law, and correctly dismisses this appeal.
Is it possible to make one correction of fact to Attorney Bamonte's statement?
Go ahead.
There was, in fact, no discussion or public statements among and between Board of Finance members during their scheduled meeting. The election of the Board of Finance chair occurred in 22 seconds flat without discussion or deliberation, and the Board of Finance vice chair occurred in 26 seconds flat with no public discussion or deliberation. And it's a matter of opinion if, in fact, the annual election of the most powerful elected board chairperson position in the municipality of Weston is, in fact, a non-event that one should not reasonably expect the generation of records for. We and other voters of Weston believe that, in fact, it's reasonable to expect some records to have been produced prior to unanimous reelection in 22 seconds flat. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for either of the parties?
This is Commissioner Fusashi. I have one question to Attorney Bamonte.
Yes?
Yes.
In point 16 of the hearing officer's report, it says that if it is found that the finance director had one responsive email chain, in your factual conclusions, you said there were two. Email is responsive email chain the same as when you say two emails?
Yes, Commissioner, that's what I'm referring to. The email chain was, in fact, comprised of those two emails that I referenced.
Yes. So your factual agreement is just different words. Okay. Thank you.
That's correct, sir.
Thank you. All right.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes, Commissioner Streeter?
Just based on the, complainant's, final statement there, he corroborated the story of the respondents, basically saying that, there was discussion amongst before the vote happened. Whether it was under a minute or not, it still is that's what the record shows, that, all the discussion, whether there was a response or not, occurred at that meeting, and whether or not it went for less than a minute or for 10 minutes, that was discussion on who was being elected. And I firmly, I guess I agree with the hearing officer's decision that, in this case, and I will support it.
Thank you. All right. Any other commissioners wish to be heard? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Haythorn. Thank you, Attorney Bamonte.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. So we're up to a report on pending appeals.
Yes. I've got Attorney Harmon here. We didn't have a chance to confer beforehand, but I think she might have a couple of things she'd like to share.
Just one thing. This is Felicia Harmon. I don't know. I think the commissioners will remember a decision that was written by Attorney Victor Perpetua that had to do with an accidental death at Whiting Forensic Hospital, which is a specialized inpatient facility that provides services to individuals involved with the criminal justice system. I think that's a fair statement. And the claim, the request was for the police report that was produced in connection with that accidental death. The commission, Attorney Perpetua heard the case, and we ordered disclosure, finding that that police report was not a psychiatric record and it wasn't HIPAA protected. And the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services appealed that case to the Superior Court. We did not prevail in that case before Judge Cordani. And so we appealed and they cross appealed because I think Judge Cordani had ordered the report disclosed with redactions and Demas didn't like that part of the order. But he did find that it was a psychiatrist patient privilege document, that it was HIPAA protected. So we were at the appellate court and it was fully briefed. And on November 12th, 2021, I filed a motion, a pre-argument motion with the Supreme Court, asking the Supreme Court to consider transferring the case from the appellate court over to itself. And I just wanted to let the commission know that on March 1st, 2022, the Supreme Court granted that pre-argument motion, and the case has now been redocketed in front of the Supreme Court. And I think it will be better for us to argue this case at the Supreme Court, since we have a case that was very similar that was argued a few years ago, and that case involved records in the possession, again, of Demas at Whiting Forensic Hospital that had to do with Amy Archer Gilligan. It was a split decision, and you know, on very thin grounds did we not prevail. So I thought it was a good idea to get this case, which is very different, I think, before the Supreme Court. And I just wanted to let the commission know that it is now before the Supreme Court. That's it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And also, Felicia, isn't the drum matter, you're working on the brief also at the Supreme Court, correct?
Oh, yes, yes. Drum is another case that's being briefed, and that has also been pulled. It was pulled from, I think, the appellate court up to the Supreme Court, and we are briefing that right now. And so I think that both cases will probably be argued, I'm thinking, in the fall.
And on that one, we have preliminary discussions with some folks who may wish to file to see if they can file an amicus brief in support of the commission's position in that case, which I think would be very good to have.
Yes. So
we'll keep you posted on that. Thank you, Felicia. Under Executive Director's Report, status of our operations, just ongoing, we're scheduling, I would say, probably 4 hearings per day. Would that be about right? I'm looking over at my colleagues here. And we're also trying to get a few of our diehard commissioners who like to come in for hearings. We're trying to get you back in here, and in some cases, get you in here for your first time. You know who you are. Commissioner Chavez has been trying to come in for a hearing for a little while, and cases have been getting resolved just before she gets to hear them. So that's where we are with that. I think I mentioned at the last meeting that I was at that I would reach out to you just to see about your comfort level about conducting some commission meetings in person. So I will do that soon after this meeting. I would like to potentially see us do this maybe in the summer. And I want to make sure that everyone feels okay with that. And that's it under that. Under staff reports, I had also mentioned the last meeting I was at that our Cindy Cannata will be retiring as of April 1st. She told me not to bring this up again, but I am. And that is, you know, right around the corner. She has agreed to, if we can work through the paperwork, come back as a temporary retired worker for a little while to help us train and deal with the transition. So we're thrilled with that. And we are planning a little luncheon for her, but then we will be planning a larger gathering in the likely in the early fall that we will keep you all apprised of. And we may have some other folks retiring, and we may have quite a large party at that time, but we'll fill you in on that as the time approaches. But this, I guess, will officially be Cindy's last meeting as a full-time state employee. And I just want to say that, and I'm sure I'll have remarks at other times, but that she's probably the most dedicated public servant the state of Connecticut has ever seen. And she's not only a tremendous colleague, but as we all know, a friend to all of us and to all of the complainants and respondents who appear before us. And she will be very, very missed, but we're not going to let her go yet. So I don't know if anybody else wanted to remark at this time.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes, Commissioner Hankins. Yes, Cindy, I will miss you terribly. You know, I worked for your father a long time ago when I was with the city of Meriden, and he was lovely, and so are you. And, you know, you just will be missed.
Commissioner Thanks. Streeter here.
Commissioner Streeter.
Cindy, I'm sad to see you go, but I'm glad you'll be able to spend time with your family and enjoy your retirement. And I hope our paths continue to cross each other.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Cindy, this is Felicia. Don't go.
We're not letting her go. We're going to have a lot of farewells for Cindy.
So, this is Owen Egan. Cindy, we're going to miss you terribly. I'm happy to hear that you may be coming back. So we're saying goodbye, but you may be back. So that's wonderful. I'll specifically miss all the organization that you've done for the trips that we took down the Connecticut River, the meals that we had at Christmas, and then just your happy disposition and keeping us going at the FOI. You will be sorely missed. Thank you.
Okay, moving on from that topic to our legislative report. Let's see, is Attorney Paula Perlman here? Paula, are you with us?
I am, but now I'm feeling a little sad after saying our goodbyes to Cindy.
The legislative report will cheer you up.
Oh, of course. Just briefly, a few things. I wanted to apprise the commission that the commission's proposals, the five proposals, were raised by the legislature at that last meeting. I don't believe they were. And they were actually, all of them received a public hearing before the Government Administrations and Elections Committee. And Colleen testified, and she received, there were a few questions, but I don't believe there was any opposition. So we'll hopefully those proposals will make it at committee and continue through their process and get passed by the legislature. And also, just to add, there is another public hearing before the Government Administration Elections Committee this Friday, at which we plan to testify and submit some statements, including another proposal dealing with the remote meetings bill. Unlike the other bill that was taken up by the Planning and Development Committee, which would have completely eliminated the sunset date for allowing the meetings, this one just extends it to the end of the year. So I'm not sure which of these bills will will make it out of committee. And the second, interestingly enough, actually deals with the proposed exemptions to deal with email lists. So the essentially what the commission voted on today and in the past few cases recently. So that is something that we're going to be commenting on Friday. So that's all I have for now.
This is Commissioner Fusashi. I have a quick question. Could you do us, or do me, or do all the commissioners a small favor? Bills that we support, that the FYC supported, or you all supported, and they get out of committee, could you do a little short summary of them, or whenever bills supported by the commission get affirmatively moved out of committee to the legislature?
Of course.
Thank you.
I do, at the end of the session, I do compile a legislative report that addresses.
That's very helpful, but I'm really thinking in the process that in between step, when something supported by the commission moves through committee, therefore is likely or may get actually a vote in the Senate and the House. Just a short summary of where we have as a commission to take in a position that might be voted upon. Just be good, a small update, if it's not too much work. Thank
no,
you.
Of course.
It likely will be short, as there aren't that many bills that we support that actually get out of committee. But I'm happy to do that.
Just for the record, it'd be useful to know on which ones we took a position that moved out of committee.
Absolutely. We'll get that to you. Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think that's all I have. Nothing under new business. Unless you have any questions for me.
No. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move we adjourn.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
We'll take a roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes, yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Owen Egan, yes. We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Great meeting.
Thank
you. Good job. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.